That Cast Network presents The No Huddle, an in-depth and fun trip through the 2018 Oregon football season with host Justin Myers.
Happy Friday, everybody, or, well, however you're listening to this. This is the other thing I'm going to have to figure out moving from broadcast radio to the podcast world is some of you are going to be listening to this on Saturday. Some of you are going to be listening to this on Sunday. Some of you, as you should be, by the way, should be listening to this the moment that you are able to download it. But welcome back to the No Huddle Podcast. I am your host, Justin Myers. This is the ThatCast Podcast Network. We are taping this on a Friday afternoon from the No Huddle World Headquarters, still remaining a secret, by the way, because I'm telling you, this podcast is gaining steam. It's gaining fans by the minute. And if we let you know where we were broadcasting from, we would just be inundated with people. I think it would be a lot like College Game Day, a College Game Day atmosphere, except for we don't have the means to keep everybody back. But happy football game day to all of you listening. This is week two for Oregon, Portland State, 11 a.m. kickoff at Autzen Stadium, and the typical week two get right game. And it's a different style of get right game than Oregon has had in the past, but usually coaches will schedule this type of opponent, and let's be honest, Portland State is doing this strictly for a paycheck, and good for them. I like the fact that Oregon has Portland State scheduled in this game, and I'll tell you why. Because if the money is going to go to a division or a 1AA opponent, or excuse me, FCS opponent, not FBS opponent, I like the fact that it would stick with Portland State in the state of Oregon. I like that Oregon or Oregon State, I think, should schedule Portland State each and every year. Use it as a get-right game. Get Portland State some cash. Let them up their facilities so they can compete at their level. And both Oregon and Oregon State get to take in a payday. So get-right game for Oregon in week two. The pod earlier this week, we talked about Bowling Green. Now kind of moving forward each and every day, these are three things that I'm going to be looking for in this Portland State game. The three things that I want to find out by the end of Oregon and Portland State. First and foremost, now we are at a very, very small sample set for Mario Cristobal as a head coach. As a matter of fact, he's two games in as a head coach, but there's one trend that I've noticed. And again, this is as nitpicking is going to get. But Oregon has not come out of the gates strong in the last two games. They were shut out in the first quarter against Boise State. They spotted Bowling Green a 10-0 lead before they scored a touchdown in the first quarter. Now, to Oregon's credit, they bounced back, put up 28 in the second quarter, and they ended up winning going away. But in the two games under Mario Cristobal, there's only been one real trend that I've noticed, and that is Oregon isn't starting fast. Is that just a coincidence? We'll find out, I think, against Portland State. But can Oregon come out and start fast? This team, for whatever reason, the last couple of games, and you even noticed it, I think, a little bit last year under Willie Taggart, but you got to kind of erase those from your memory. But I give them a pass in the Vegas Bowl because the team went through just a bunch of drama, a bunch of nonsense. You know, when your head coach is lying to your face and then you've got to suck it up and play a bowl game, and then the second best player on your team, Royce Freeman, last year decides he doesn't want to risk injuries, but he's going to stand on the sideline and give a pump-up speech, give a motivational speech, like telling you to go out and give it your all, but I'm too valuable, so I'm going to be sitting on the sideline. Too much weirdness in the Vegas Bowl last year, but still, they got shut out in the first quarter, came out sluggish, and you kind of attributed that to everything that happened the weeks previous. Now, week one against Bowling Green, come out sluggish again. Sloppy, turn the ball over, spot Bowling Green a 10-0 lead before they go. So can Oregon come out of the gates fast? Is this going to be a team that is going to come out right away, smack you in the mouth, and establish the tone early, because you have to against these lower division teams. And not because the win or the loss is going to be at stake, because I'll tell you what, if the win or the loss is at stake in any point in this game, then Oregon's got much bigger problems than can they come out fast. But college football, there are three things that are vitally, vitally important. First and foremost is talent. If you don't have talent, you're not going to win. Second is leadership. Leadership from the head coach down. And if you listen to the first pod, when we were previewing the Bowling Green game, I went into all of that. What are we going to learn about Mario Cristobal? Leadership is important. There's a reason why when Nick Saban walks into a room, everybody else stops. You look at the best coaches in college football, when they walk into a room, they own it, whether you play for them or not. So leadership, incredibly important. Third most important thing when it comes to winning at the college football level, and that's confidence. Look, these are kids. And kids' confidence can be shaken. Even guys with tremendous talent, tremendous football ability, it all comes down to how confident are you. And when you play a lower division opponent like Portland State, you need to come out with the utmost confidence, cockiness, brashness, put your foot on the gas pedal, and start fast. Oregon's got 2 weeks to do that. They didn't do it against Bowling Green. You've got Portland State and you've got San Jose State, all before you face Stanford, and we'll get to Stanford in a little bit, all before you face Stanford in a very pivotal game. I mean, we're going to know an awful lot about where this team can possibly go by September the 22nd. Like, I don't even think summer is officially over until after September 22nd. So we may not, Oregon may have an awful lot known before we're officially into fall. But that's the thing I'm going to be looking for, because the last two games, you go back to Boise State in the Vegas Bowl and you go against Bowling Green, they did not start out well. Is that something to do with the way Cristobal prepares them, or is it just a coincidence? So number one on my list is, can Oregon come out of the gates fast and put it on a team that they are far, far superior to? Second thing I'm going to be looking for over the weekend, and that's going to be who's going to be the backup quarterback of this team? Who's going to play backup QB for Oregon? Because you saw against Bowling Green, Braxton Burmeister got a chance to come in, take some snaps, couldn't move the offense. They give up a touchdown. Bowling Green gets back in it. And Cristobal has to put Herbert back in the game. A little bit of a hiccup, probably the biggest blunder for Cristobal in his first official game, his first regular season game as Oregon's coach. I mean, if there was one criticism, I would say putting Burmeister in and then having to put Herbert back in the game. And I know that everybody out there is looking to this kid, Tyler Shuck, and whether or not he is going to come in and burn his red shirt. I wouldn't be surprised. Now, again, this is coming from somebody that has no idea what goes on in practice. This is the big problem with the backup quarterback debate. And a lot of times I don't even like to get into it. But when you're playing Portland State, you've got to nitpick stuff. And this is going to be a perfect opportunity for either Braxton Burmeister or Tyler Shuck to get some reps, to get real game time, college level speed reps. And as we learned last year, you're one fragile collarbone from your season going completely down the toilet. The backup quarterbacks for Oregon are going to be important this year in case Herbert rolls an ankle. If he sprains an ankle, sprains his knee, maybe gets his bell rung a little bit and you miss him for a quarter or two. Look, if you are Oregon and you are going to miss Herbert for more than one game, then it doesn't matter who the backup quarterback is. Oregon might be in big, big trouble. But is Oregon going to have a guy that can come in and not necessarily be as dynamic as Herbert, but who can come in and move the offense? And so far, we haven't seen that from Braxton Burmeister. But I'm wondering if we're being too unfair. I wonder if I'm being unfair with Burmeister. Last year, I completely erase. He was a freshman thrown into a situation that he had no business being in. There were other quarterbacks that were supposed to be there to get those reps. Now, no fault to them. Look, if you're going to be Justin Herbert's backup, I'm transferring too. But Burmeister got put into an unfair situation, and quite frankly, with a play caller in Willie Taggart that had no chance of making adjustments to make him have any success. And that's what you saw in Burmeister's struggle last year. And again, it comes back to confidence. I think his confidence was shaken because Willie Taggart couldn't put together an offense to let him actually shine. They made no adjustments. They ran the same stuff, made no adjustments. They're running the same play in the fourth quarter that wasn't working in the first quarter, that wasn't working the week before. And by the way, Florida State fans, get used to it. Because when Florida State goes up against Louisville or Clemson, or when they play Notre Dame later on in the year, get used to the same plays that weren't working against Virginia Tech, because Willie Taggart's going to call them too. But Burmeister got put into an unfair situation. Personally, I don't know how good Tyler Shuck is, and none of you do, unless you are a quarterback coach on the staff or are able to watch practice. Nobody knows how good this kid is going to be. We just know that Burmeister struggled a year ago. So when it comes to the second half of this game on Saturday or into the fourth quarter, which I fully believe you're going to be seeing somebody take the snaps other than Justin Herbert, who's it going to be? Personally, I don't care if Shuck burns his red shirt. That's something that college football fans truly obsess on. And I used to, but you know what? I come around on that. It's like those people that stockpile stuff. You ever get around people that just stockpile stuff and it's like, hey, can I borrow a pen? You've got 17 pens over there. It's like, yeah, but if I let you borrow it, then I only have 16 pens. If Oregon needs to burn Tyler Shuck's red shirt year this year, then what you are potentially sacrificing, and as I do my public school math, as I count ahead, you know, 18, 19, 20, we're looking at the 2021 season. That's the worry, right? You burn his redshirt year, you are looking at the 2022 season. So I have no problem if he's better than Burmeister, burn the kid's redshirt, get him out there for some reps, and let's get this team a backup quarterback, because it didn't look like Burmeister had made any real steps. Now, again, saw two series on Saturday. That's not enough. And I'm actually pulling for Burmeister because, like I mentioned, I thought he got put into a completely unfair situation. But that's a question I want answered by the end of this game. By the end of this game, I want to know who's going to be the backup for this team. Finally, as we continue our theme that I threw out week one about how we are all going to get to know Mario Cristobal throughout this season, is Mario Cristobal a run-it-up kind of guy? Because you get to a point in these games, and yep, I've been calling Portland State cupcakes. Tyson Alger, my good friend who writes for The Athletic, actually has a great article about what it's like being a cupcake. But that's what they are. They're a cupcake on the schedule on a run of three. Bowling Green to Portland State to San Jose State. Cupcake, cupcake, cupcake. And I think Oregon, so smart for scheduling them, even if they didn't do it completely on purpose. But in these cupcake games, are you, as a head coach, a run-it-up guy? We learned last year, Willie Taggart was a run-it-up guy. There were times last year where you could have taken your foot off the gas, ran the ball into the line, burned some time off the clock, kept the score around 50, 60. He ran it up to 77. Is Mario Cristobal going to be a run-up-the-score type of guy? Especially with this team. Personally, I think you need to build up as much confidence as possible. And no offense to Portland State, but you need to take a bunch of licks on the chin for this team to build up its confidence to get ready for Stanford. Because when you have the one detriment of having a parade of cupcakes is you're not going to be tested. mean, the first half of the first quarter against Bowling Green is probably the biggest test that Oregon is going to face so far in the non-conference before you face Stanford, who is going to possibly be a top 10 team by the time you face them. So if you're not going to be tested, you need to build confidence. I would love to see Cristobal run it up. Run it up, light the scoreboard up, get Herbert out as fast as possible. There's no need for him to get reps, and build up this team's confidence. So there we go. Three things I'm going to be looking for at Autzen Stadium on Saturday. Can Oregon come out fast? Because the last two games under Mario Cristobal, they have had subpar first quarters. Who's going to be the backup by the end of the day? And is Mario Cristobal a run-it-up kind of guy? All right, when we come back, I'm going to take a look at the Pac-12 slate and some other game, other matchups that I'm interested in. These are supposed to be matchups that matter. Outside of the conference, there's no matchups that matter that are going to affect the conference or Oregon one way or the other. But some interesting games on the Pac-12 slate. We'll dive into that when we come back. It is the No Huddle Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Myers, and you are listening to us on the ThatCast Podcast Network.
Find the growing lineup of ThatCast Network podcasts and videocasts at ThatCast.com. Now, back to Justin Myers and the No Huddle.
Welcome back to the No Huddle Podcast. Justin Myers with you on the ThatCast Podcast Network, ThatCast.com. Thanks for listening to this this project that we have throughout the 2018 Oregon football season. And if you like what you hear, tell a friend, let everybody know. The No Huddle Podcast, new episodes come out Friday and Monday, getting you through the 2018 college football season. Of course, we're going to be spending so much time covering Oregon football with Portland State on the schedule this weekend. But it's time to take a deep dive into the Pac-12 slate because there are some interesting games. There's also some snooze fest games like Washington State favored by 34 over San Jose State. That one has no impact. Oregon State looking to get their first win. They're taking on Southern Utah. And Washington, that is a, you want to talk about a get right game, because Washington, after suffering that just gut-wrenching loss in Atlanta to Auburn, they're going to be at home against North Dakota. So a couple of get-right games, one for Oregon State, we'll see. Definitely one for Washington, Oregon with a get-right game as well. It doesn't get any easier for Chip Kelly, though. After UCLA took the opening game loss at home, they then get to travel to the number 6 team in the country, to Oklahoma. The Sooners are favored by 30 in this game. Look, the Chip Kelly UCLA experiment is going to take time. It's going to take a whole lot more time than it took at Oregon, and it may not ever work. I still believe that when you look at a program like UCLA, who has had coaches, Rick Neuheisel for one, Rick Neuheisel took Washington and made them relevant again in the early 2000s. And then Rick Neuheisel went to his alma mater, UCLA, couldn't get him over the hump. You look at the coaches that have been at UCLA that just for whatever reason, whether it was Neuheisel, whether it was Mora, who was an NFL guy, couldn't get him over the hump. Is Chip Kelly going to be the guy to get UCLA over the hump? I'm still not buying it. And this is not a knock against Chip Kelly. I'm just still not buying that Chip Kelly is going to turn UCLA into a powerhouse. I think Chip is incredibly smart. I think he's an incredibly good football coach. But I think his situation at Oregon, his ability to coach, plus some other very fortunate factors, the stars kind of aligned for him, and to his credit, went on an unbelievable 4-year run and then cashed it in and went to the NFL. I don't know if the stars are aligned at UCLA. The good news is there's no pressure there. The bad news is, though, there's no pressure there. There's a reason why places without a football culture don't put out big football winners. There's a reason why USC, who's just across town, and all of their alumni and their students and their fan base are obsessed with winning, seem to win more. They're two teams in the same conference, in the same city, recruiting the same players. Why is USC a constant winner and UCLA always mediocre, middle of the road? It's because of the fan base. USC is a passionate fan base. That that fan base puts pressure on coaches. When coaches don't have pressure on them, I think it's human nature that you just don't go that extra level of insanity. And by the way, to win in college football, you've got to be insane. The amount of time these coaches spend on recruiting, obsessing, all that being said, UCLA is going to get their doors blown off by Oklahoma because I think Oklahoma, put up 60-something last week. Arizona travels to Houston. Houston favored by 3.5. That's an interesting game. The same with Colorado headed to Nebraska. Nebraska favored by 3.5. Those are two games that if the Pac-12 can find a way to get a win, can go to repairing some of the damage that was done last week. More so, I think, Colorado against Nebraska. Colorado against Nebraska, if Colorado can find a way to squeak out a win and get a win on the road against a Power 5 opponent, that will go, I think, a long way in trying to repair some of the damage that Washington, Arizona, UCLA all did to the conference last week. I'm really interested to see how Arizona responds after that loss to BYU. We know that Arizona has Khalil Tate. They've got offensive talent. They're able to put up numbers in bunches. But anytime you get a new head coach in there, there's always going to be friction. And when you take a tough loss, one of two things happens. The team either figures that their way isn't working and they buy into what the coaches are doing, but more often, you see a lot of finger pointing, see a lot of guys going, none of you recruited me, none of you care about me, I'm going to play selfish because I need to get anything, I need to get what I need out of this. So Arizona could completely fall apart this year. Utah is a 10.5-point favorite on the road against Northern Illinois in a horribly, horribly scheduled game. Again, I'm going to scream it from the rooftops, but I don't have a rooftop. I have a microphone and a podcast, so I will use this medium. Pac-12 teams, quit scheduling non-Power 5 games on the road. Just quit doing it. Why on earth would Utah, a Pac-12 team now for 10 years almost? Why would you schedule? Well, I guess the Pac-12 team since 2011. So, sorry, we're looking at more like 7 years. Either way, they've been in the conference long enough to where this game was definitely not scheduled when Utah was in the Mountain West. Oregon last year going to Wyoming. Stupid game. Stupid game. Nothing to gain there. Same with Washington State at Wyoming this year. Oregon State at Colorado State last year. Stanford at San Diego State last year. And now you've got Utah heading to Northern Illinois. It's a terribly scheduled game. And Utah favored by 10.5. Pac-12 gets no win out of that situation. California heading on the road to BYU. Again, another terribly scheduled game. I know that BYU got the win against Arizona. They've had some success in the past. But again, if you're Cal, why would you ever schedule this game? If you're going to schedule road games, go play Power 5 teams. If you don't want to go play Power 5 teams, then do what Washington did last year. Do what Oregon did this year and schedule a parade of cupcakes to come to your home stadium and make a bunch of money. Why on earth Cal would ever schedule at BYU? They're on the road. They're 2.5-point dogs to a non-Power 5 team. How's that going to do for the conference? Imagine if BYU in back-to-back weeks takes out Arizona and Cal. I mean, you want to talk about the most pivotal game for the reputation of the strength of this conference? It is California at BYU, a game that's at 7:15 and nobody cares about. Michigan State is heading to Arizona State. Michigan State, by the way, the number 15 team in the country at ASU, who I'm not buying into. Michigan State only favored by 5. Vegas knows something that I don't know. I realize it's on the road. I realize it's Arizona in early September, and these Michigan State kids just aren't, I mean, playing in that kind of heat's a little different. But why on earth is Michigan State only favored by 5 on the road to Arizona State? That's a 2-touchdown game. If you're the number 15 team in the country, going up against a team that's going to probably going to factor into the bottom half of the Pac-12. So that's an interesting game to keep an eye on. Of course, the beautiful 7:45. I mean, it would be just Pac-12 poetry if Arizona State pulls off a win against the number 15 team in the country in Michigan State, right? And a game that kicks off in Michigan at 10:45. 10:45 at night is where, in Michigan, is where this game kicks off. So Arizona State could pull off a big upset and a big big feather in the hat of this conference. But guess what? Is it going to matter? Because nobody is going to see it. 7:45, that game. And there is one conference game. This is where the rubber meets the road. Early on, and I do like that Stanford and USC have been doing this the last couple of years. Stanford and USC facing each other early, and I think that's smart for those two teams because you're in different divisions and you can always get back to the Pac-12 championship game. USC on the farm. Stanford, a 6-point favorite, number 17 Trojans, number 10 Stanford. I think we're going to learn an awful lot about both of those teams. And as an Oregon fan, if you are going to be watching any game this weekend, that's the one to watch. Because Oregon's got Stanford in a couple of weeks. And I'm wondering if Stanford is going to be just plug and play, or are they going to have problems because they don't have a quarterback? Bryce Love shut down last week. Stanford still got the win, but Bryce Love got shut down last week. The USC defense is going to be better than San Diego State's defense. So there you go. There's the Pac-12 slate. Games that matter, though, that I would keep an eye on is Colorado at Nebraska, Michigan State at Arizona State, but Cal, BYU. Cal needs to pull out of what would be an upset victory in Utah against the Cougars of BYU. All right, we're starting something. This is going to be really, really fun. When we come back, we have got the No Huddle Q&A. I put out a request on Twitter, people asking for questions, football-related, non-football-related. We got a wide variety, and I'm going to answer your questions on the No Huddle Q&A when we come back around. I'm Justin Myers. This is the No Huddle Podcast on the ThatCast Podcast Network.
Find the growing lineup of ThatCast Network podcasts and videocasts at ThatCast.com. Now, back to Justin Myers and the No Huddle.
Welcome back to the No Huddle Podcast. I am your host, Justin Myers. This is the ThatCast Podcast Network, and something we're going to be doing each and every Friday. Look, it's Friday. You're all in a good mood. You're going to be headed to the game tomorrow, or you're headed to the game right now listening to this podcast. And I put out a request on Twitter for some Q&A questions, some having to do with Oregon football, some having to do with food, some having to do with nothing relevant to this podcast. But if you've been listening to me over the years, you know that this is the kind of stuff that I live for. So I threw it out on Twitter, and be prepared. If you like this segment, I'm going to throw it out again when we come back here next week for some more Q&A questions. So let's start with this. My good friend, Steve Mims of the Register Guard, he tweets the No Huddle Podcast, and he says, better $5 meal. The Dairy Queen $5 lunch or KFC's $5 fill up? Very good question. I'm going to go with the KFC $5 fill up. And here's why. The one thing that Dairy Queen has on KFC is you get a sundae with the meal. The $5 fill up from KFC, you get a chocolate chip cookie. Look, if we were going dessert for dessert, look, the ice cream sundae, especially from Dairy Queen, trumps the cookie that you're going to get. I mean, the cookie is just a throw-in from KFC, but KFC, you get mashed potatoes and gravy as your side, whereas Dairy Queen, you just get fries. Look, we've all had fries. We have fries all the time. If you go out to eat fast food, you're going to get fries. Dairy Queen's fries aren't anything special, but the mashed potatoes and gravy from KFC, that's something special. That's one of the top five fast food sides of all time. Maybe even in the top three. That may be a discussion to come in next week. But yeah, I'm giving the edge to KFC because of the mashed potatoes and the gravy. No offense to the Dairy Queen $5 lunch. They get variety too. You can go burger. You could go chicken strips. But look, if you're going to go chicken strips, you might as well already just go to KFC because that's what they do. Give me three chicken strips. Give me some mashed potatoes and gravy. Throw in a chocolate chip cookie just to, you know, cleanse the palate at the end, and a solid soda. I'm going KFC over Dairy Queen. Saban Brab, at Saban Brab on Twitter. He came up with a couple of different questions. So here we go. What movie plot will most closely resemble the Oregon 2018 football season? Well, that's a fantastic question. Let me tell you exactly the movie that I thought of when I heard this question. And you got to go back to the 80s. You got to a little movie called Can't Buy Me Love. That's right. Can't Buy Me Love, the plot of that movie, will closest resemble the Oregon football season. Ronald Miller, overlooked, right? Just like Oregon football this year. Look, Oregon football is going to win 10 games. They're overlooked. Yeah, they're ranked, but nobody's predicting them to win the Pac-12. Nobody's predicting them to win the North. People even got them ranked third in the North. Completely overlooked. How does Ronald Miller get some attention at first? Well, he has to pay to fix Wendy's dress because she spilt red wine on the suede dress, much like a lot of people feel that Oregon has to use the Phil Knight Nike money to get extra attention. But in the end, and of course there's going to be a conflict because Oregon's going to go through some struggles. At some point in the season, there's going to be a little bit of a conflict. But in the end, what did we all learn? That Ronald was cool the whole time. It was just overlooked. He didn't need all that flash. Didn't need all that money. Didn't need all that extra nonsense. It was cool the whole time. When it's all said and done, we're going to know that Oregon football was good the entire time. Just overlooked, underappreciated, out there on the riding lawnmower, just hammering it away. So yeah, Can't Buy Me Love is the plot that will most closely resemble the 2018 season. Also, by the way, there was a movie called Drive Me Crazy featuring Adrian Grenier and Melissa Joan Hart. Pretty much a shot-for-shot remake of Can't Buy Me Love. Saban also asks, this one is great. I put way too much time, by the way, into answering this question. He says, if the last four coaches at Oregon were candy bars, what candy bars would they be? Let me tell you. I went into charts. Here we go. So here's the last four coaches. We start with Chip Kelly. Chip Kelly would be a payday. Here's why Chip Kelly is a payday. Payday, peanuts on every other candy bar are on the inside. Payday, they're on the outside. That's innovation. That's something that nobody else was doing at the time. Everybody else in college football was running with the huddle and was running the play clock down. No, Chip pushed the envelope. Did things that nobody else was doing. Peanuts on the outside of the candy bar, you say? That'll never work. Nope, it works. Also, what are paydays known for? The peanuts on the outside, they're salty. And if you've ever been around Chip Kelly, he is salty. And third reason why, after 4 years, Chip went to the NFL for a payday. And he got it. He cashed in, and he went for a payday. Mark Helfrich, Hershey bar. There's nothing wrong with a Hershey bar, per se. Nothing wrong with just a good old-fashioned Hershey bar. But when is Hershey's chocolate at its best? When it's with other stuff. When it's with other stuff. When he was the offensive coordinator with Chip Kelly. When he's playing with the greatest quarterback to ever play at Oregon in Marcus Mariota. Hershey's chocolate is good, but it's just got to be with other stuff. Then, when it's on its own, it just doesn't quite live up to it. Just not quite the same. You put Hershey's chocolate in a s'more, it's delicious. You put Hershey's chocolate syrup in milk, best chocolate milk you're going to have. Hershey's chocolate on its own, it's good, but it's just not quite there. So that's Mark Helfrich. He's a Hershey bar. Willie Taggart, M&M's. M&M's. Why is that? Because M&M's, there's never as many as you think there are going to be. It's never quite exactly what you think it's going to be. And when you get to the bottom of an M&M bag, you always figure there's more there, but it always ends up gone just a little bit too soon. That's right. And Willie Taggart was here for a year and just decided to bounce after 1 year. Look, put out a bowl of M&M's at the office. Guess what? They're gone fast. There's no other candy other than a bowl of M&M's that goes faster. So Willie Taggart is M&M's because they're gone fast. And now for Mario Cristobal, which I reserve the right to change my mind on this. But Mario Cristobal is the whatchamacallit. We're not quite sure what's in there. We're not quite sure where to categorize it, but I know it's good. What's Mario Cristobal style? I can't quite put my finger on it. I just know it's good. That's why I'm going with the whatchamacallit. Hopefully by the end of the season, we'll know a little bit more and I'll be able to give a more informed answer. But there we go. Chip is a payday because the peanuts on the outside were innovative and they're salty and he's salty and he left for a payday. Mark Helfrich is a Hershey bar because Hershey just needs something else to go along with it to make it great. Willie Taggart's M&M's because M&M's are always gone faster than you think. And Mario Cristobal, the whatchamacallit. My good friend Andy Bunker, the Bunker Mentality Show, which is in, which is on the air in Atlanta, wants to know what's the single greatest '90s R&B song and why. Again, put a lot of thought into this. I'm going with "No Diggity" by Blackstreet because at the time to get Dr. Dre to do the opening rap, Dr. Dre was the biggest producer with biggest rap stars on the planet, and he's going to do the opening hip hop bars to an R&B song. Plus, if you ever listen to No Diggity, it's still relevant. It still sounds good today. And the quintessential thing about being a 90s R&B song, it has to be about nothing. You ever listen to the words of No Diggity? I like the way you work it. No diggity. I got to bag it up. What does that even mean? Nobody knows. Nobody cares. Best 90s R&B song of all time. No diggity. Paul on Twitter wants to know, should the team stop swag surfing at Autzen Stadium? Seemed like a holdover from Willie, and it didn't seem like the players or the fans were really feeling it on Saturday. 100% agree. End the swag surfing. It's done. It's over. Kill it. Try to put it on life support on Saturday, and it's not working. They play the song. The cheerleaders do the swag surfing. There's like four guys who had one too many beers sitting in the front row of the student section. Other than that, nobody else is paying attention. Nobody else is doing it. It was a Willie Taggart thing. It needs to go. Much like, and this is a small little thing, but I go back to when Mark Helfrich took over the program from Chip Kelly and they were still doing Win the Day. No, you need to create your own identity. This Oregon football 2.0 is a good start. The next step, let's can the swag surfing. Find something else. It's got to be something that the players and the students do, and it brings them together and it connects them. They just weren't feeling it on Saturday. Nobody was. It's time to end the swag surfing. From Ryan on Twitter, extremely early bowl projections show a possibility of Florida State and Oregon in a bowl game. Like or no? No, I don't like it at all because Florida State's not going to be playing in a good bowl game this year. They're just not. I understand that there would be a lot of fun drama, but Florida State's not playing in a good bowl game. Oregon, I think, has got some solid chances at playing in an upper-tier bowl. Plus, I think if you're Oregon, you're going to eventually be better off without Willie Taggart. So why worry about trying to throw it in his face? He left. You know, whenever there's a breakup, there's one person that always just obsesses on it just a little too much, and it gets a little sad. Oregon can't be that football program. Oregon fans, you cannot be the fans that obsess about Willie Taggart. He's gone. Breakups happen. You got your new guy. Move on. Go forward. And then finally, how many games will Taggart win at Florida State this year? I was looking at Florida State's schedule. They're going to be lucky to win six games, which is, again, why I don't think Oregon should want to play Florida State in a bowl game, because I think Florida State is going to be 6-6, and I think it might even be tough to get to 6, but they got Notre Dame on the schedule, they've got Clemson on the schedule, they've got Louisville on the schedule, and I think they're going to be an absolute mess. They've got talent for sure. I just don't know if Willie Taggart has got any magic in that playbook of his. So there we go. There's the no huddle Q&A. Keep the questions coming. We're going to be doing this each and every Friday. Game 2 React. That pod's coming on Monday. And again, if you listen to the pod, if you like it, tell your friends about it. Tell your family. Tell your coworkers. And all I ask, one or two strangers. Just one or two strangers in the street. Just walk up to them and let them know that we're doing a lot of fun stuff here. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a fantastic weekend. Enjoy the games. We'll talk to you again at the beginning of next week. This is the No Huddle Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Myers. That Cast Podcast Network, thatcast.com.